In the art world, this has been the year of Frank Stella. He's one of America's greatest living artists, and he's nearly 80 years old. Last fall, he had a major retrospective that filled an entire floor of the new Whitney Museum in New York City. And now he has another major retrospective, this one focused just on his prints. It's at the Madison Museum of Contemporary Art, and Steve Paulson went to both shows. Steve, I have to be honest, I didn't realize Stella even made prints.
Yeah, I mean, I think most people outside the art world don't even realize that, but you could actually make a case that he has been one of the major printmakers of the last century.
Huh, because when I think of Stella, really what I think of is gigantic scale paintings, you know, the kind of thing that fills mm-hmm. whole walls.
Yeah, and I mean, what's interesting is if you go back to early in his career, I mean, what really made his name in the early 60s was his so-called black paintings, and they weren't so huge. He kind of launched this minimalist movement within abstract art where, you know, you just looked at them and you thought, oh, they're just totally black. But no, there were actually black stripes in them. And then from there, I mean, this is part of the fascination with these retrospectives, is he went from these totally dark black paintings to these huge works of art in all kinds of media. I mean, not just paintings, but also sculptures that were filled with color, and they were just enormous in size.
Yeah, so a lot of people probably are thinking of those things that look like if you had a gigantic protractor
right.
and you drew a huge oval on the wall and then you filled it in with lime green and tangerine mm-hmm. and Kool-Aid pink.
Yeah.
So what do the prints look like?
Well, the prints are, they're fascinating because when I think of a print, I think of something that's flat.
It's a sheet of paper.
It's a sheet of paper. His prints are not like that. His prints are thick. I mean, there are some prints that actually stick out from the wall a good half a foot.
Huh.
They're three-dimensional. So, I mean, he's really kind of asking the question, what is a print?
Okay, well, you had a chance to talk with him when he was here, and we're about to hear your interview. What else do we need to know before we hear it?
Well, and one of the things that fascinated me was, I mean, I'm always interested in what inspires artists. You know, where does the creativity come from? And, you know, given his subject matter, he's done stuff about Moby Dick, the novel, about jazz music, about race cars. I mean, sort of like interesting subjects. But when you actually ask him, you know, so where does the actual art come from? He'll talk about shapes and lines and circles and curves.
Geometry.
And geometry. Yes, it's like bringing math into art.
Huh.
And then the other thing that's kind of fascinating is at first he didn't even like prints. I mean, he'd been this famous painter and he became a printmaker by accident.
I was encouraged by Ken Tyler, who was a printmaker and was printing in Gemini. And I was kind of lost in California for a while in 1967. And he wanted me, encouraged me or coerced me, I don't know, and he bullied me into trying to make prints. And I came up with a compromise that, you know, to make prints that was sort of like drawings. And I wanted to make it like a book, but it was kind of, you know, boring.
Hmm. Now, I think when most people think of a print, they think it's flat. It's two-dimensional. And the thing that is so striking about your prints is they don't look flat. I mean, I have to ask you about one that's in this show. It's from your Moby Dick series, Jonah Historically Regarded, which kind of extends way out from the wall.
Well, that's the pregnant, one of the pregnant prints.
Yeah. Yes, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. It seemed like it was an interesting idea, and the result is, I guess, okay, but it seems a little simple-minded to me now. But you have to make the paper form over another plate, which is a dome, and then etching on the dome.
How far does it actually extend out?
I never measured it. I don't know, but it's
like
it
half
seems
a foot
like
or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
It's at least 6 inches. Might right. even be more. Yeah.
I want to ask you about your Moby Dick series because you, for years, you did a series of, what was that, 135 pieces altogether?
Something like that.
Like
yeah, actually,
that.
It's a lot more because I did a lot of them more than once, but that doesn't
yeah.
matter.
But in all different media, I mean, you did prints, you did metal reliefs, a sculpture. I mean, there was, what, a different piece for each chapter of the book?
Yeah, yeah. It started out when we were taking my kids, Peter and Patrick, to the, you know, parents have to face the weekend with their children one way or the other.
I know it well.
And so one of the things that we all seemed to like was to go to the aquarium at Coney Island. And right near the entrance was a very big glass wall, a big tank, and there were two belugas in there. And so and they're very close to you. And, you know, it was all about movement, of course, but really form. So there's the thought, the water's moving and the animals are moving. So there's a lot of motion, but it's a kind of thing that has seems like a wave motion one way or the other. And so I was thinking about that a lot, and they're belugas, but they're whales. So then I started thinking about Moby Dick. And then I was talking to my older son, and Michael, and I was saying, well, I was thinking about the book and about the wave forms, and I thought that it could go a long ways. And I said, but I thought, you know, it's 135 chapters. I don't know. It's kind of daunting. And, I don't know how it'll play out in terms of ideas and ability to carry out. He said, don't worry, you don't have to do them all. And I was so annoyed by that. I knew that I was going to, you know, do or die. There were going to be at least 135 pieces.
Did you get obsessed by the Melville
novel?
No,
I wasn't obsessed. I was annoyed by the idea that I didn't need to do them all. Which is different from obsession.
It's interesting to hear you describe this. I mean, you're talking about sort of the form, maybe going back to that first moment of seeing mm-hmm. those beluga whales and sort of the waves and all of that, whereas I think mm-hmm. most people, when they think of the novel Moby Dick, I mean, it's the obsessive quest, the search for to find the elusive mythic whale. I mean, does that appeal
well,
to you in some way?
You know, in this case, the whale, it may not be the whale, it may be the elusive geometry. I mean, you know, the geometry is just as evil. You know, I mean, the interest in the wave started, I had a geometrical bent to begin with, and then so you go from the straight line, from rectilinear geometry to curved geometry, and then once you get there, you're into topology and differential geometry, and it's kind of a grim beast.
Well, and speaking of geometry, I mean, let's talk about your series, Circuits, I mean, based on race cars. I guess I'm wondering, I mean, you have these amazing prints of, you know, these sort of lines going in all kinds of different directions. And I was wondering, is this more an exercise in geometry or is it about speed?
You know, it's hard. I mean, racing is pretty grim and it's kind of simple. I mean, it is speed, but the speed is controlled by physics. I mean, there's only so much, you can only go so fast and stay on the track. But I mean, the point of the prints is basically the routing of the shapes. So there, it's all about overlays, how the one shape is overlaid over the other. So it's the speed, the motion, and the places, and they're moving all the time, and you're following the circuits one on top of each other.
Hmm. Now, I heard that you actually have a race car in your studio. Is that right?
I have, yeah. I have a Ferrari that raced in the studio, yeah. But it raced, but it doesn't have, they sell the engine, so I don't have the engine, but I have a complete shell, yeah.
Wow. Is that like a source of inspiration for you?
Actually, it's not a source of inspiration, but it's serious in the sense that it's in the studio, so, and everybody loves it when they see it. And if the work that you're making behind it can stand up to the attention that the Ferrari gets, then you know you're going in the right direction. And if it doesn't, you ought to think about it. I mean, it's a nice test, actually.
Yeah, I mean, why? Talk about the challenge.
I didn't do that deliberately, but that's the way it plays out.
Yeah. Do you like to drive fast?
You know, I got into being a poor driver, as it were, and a dangerous one, unfortunately, on the roads. In reality, my wife sentenced me to driving school. And I had to go with Hurley Hayward, a driver who's won Le Mans a few times, actually. Anyway, we went out on the track, and it's the track in Watkins Glen. And I had a Ferrari, and we went out on the track.
Is there any connection between sitting in a race car, going at that kind of speed, and what you do as an artist?
There are a couple of things. I mean, flat out, you know, so why shouldn't you work flat out? And then I do like some of the pithy sayings of the driver. Mario Andretti's one is my favorite. You know, if everything's under control, you're not going fast enough. That pretty much sums it up. And that's about, it's somewhat true of working too, you know, and what you're doing in the studio and everything. You know, if everything's organized, it's really this, that, and the other, you know, you're not getting there.
Now, one thing that's very striking about so much of your art, your prints as well as your paintings, is scale. I mean, so often, you work big. You must like large scales.
Sometimes I like it because it's unpopular, or it seems like, you know, you go against the grain sometimes, you can't help it. But in some things like the protractor paintings, that was considered a big drag. But they didn't work any other way except if the form, which was a 5 by 10 foot, you know, protractor shape half circle, that was it. That was the unit. They needed to be that way. And you know, Larry Rubin, my dealer, he was always whining about there are no 10-foot, you know, there's no place to put 10-foot paintings in New York apartments. The ceilings are only 9 feet, and you hear about it. It's the end of the world and everything, but somehow you get through it. Yeah.
But I'm wondering, I mean, going back to what you said about having the Ferrari in your studio, you know, can the art sort of measure up to that? Is that partly why you've often done large works? I mean, it certainly grabs your attention.
You know, but that's not exactly, it's true. I mean, they might be a little bit exaggerated in scale, but you have to remember that I grew up and the artist that I loved, and the only reason I became a painter is trying to make something somewhat like the artist that I admired the most. And, you know, one of the most obvious things about post-war painting, and particularly abstract expression, was what everybody talked about. You know, the easel painting was over and the mural scale painting was back or in. Actually, it was back, because if you go to like the Louvre or something, 19th century painting dwarfs most of the paintings we make.
Now, one of your famous sayings is, what you see is what you see. And
yeah.
You're probably sick of talking about this, but I'm wondering if what you see now is different than what you saw 30 or 50 years ago.
Yes and no. I mean, things are different, but I don't think I see them any differently, but I make different judgments. I mean, because sometimes if something doesn't strike you right, it's not so bad not to waste time worrying about why you don't like it. Michael Fried was a critic. You know, he was talking one time, he was saying, you know, it's so easy to say why you don't like something, but it's actually very hard to say why you do like something. And that's true.
Is it partly just because you can't always put it into words?
No, that would be nice to hide behind the words, but that's actually not the truth. If I can see it, it doesn't bother me that I don't have the words to explain it to somebody else. If I get it, I get it. It'll come out in my work if I need it or I want it.
We talked earlier about speed and race cars, and of course one element of speed is time. And I'm wondering how much you think about that in terms of what you do as an artist. It's sort of where you are in your career now. I mean, you're almost 80 years old.
Yeah, it's over. I mean, I get it. But I mean, it doesn't bother
me. It's not over. I mean, you're still making art.
Yeah. Oh no, I can go on. I suppose I go on for a while making art. But I mean, it's not. You know, it's different. I mean, you don't. I mean, there's no future in it. And so when you're young, you still have an idea of something other than the here and now. There is the future. But now I'm stuck with, as the physicists like to say, here and now. And that's it.
Do you feel the clock ticking?
No, I don't feel it like that. But I feel that there's nothing other than the moment, though. So you have to do it now.
The artist Frank Stella talking with Steve Paulson. The retrospective exhibition of his prints is on display now at the Madison Museum of Contemporary Art.